Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood, Tuesday, June 5th. Let's cock-a-doodle-do it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm your host, Dane Martinez. They call me Speed Spitting Statistician. And, of course, I am joined by the king, Scott Engel, El Rey de Fantasia. How you doing, Scott? What do you do on a day where there's only, like, four or five baseball games, Scott?
I try to focus on the ones that are being played. You don't have to bounce around, thing. Okay, what's going on this one and that one? You can focus more on the performances, especially if you're watching the San Francisco Giants break up San Francisco. They've now won five in a row, and they got Madison Bumgarner.
They got Madison Bumgarner coming on the hill today. Yeah, they hit up Zach Godley. They win 10-3 last night. I wanted to ask you about Andrew McCutchen, Scott, if we're starting on that game. Andrew McCutchen hits his fifth home run of the season. It's pretty much the question I asked you yesterday about Marcell Ozuna. You know, now McCutchen is not expected to have the same kind of power output as Ozuna, but similar because, listen, new face in a new place, going from a Pittsburgh ballpark to a San Francisco ballpark. This guy is, you know, not the MVP candidate he once was, but a lot of people thought he could be helpful in that lineup. You know, at this point, Scott, I mean, he's hitting 246, OPS 348, of 412. Would you consider him a disappointment? Is this a guy that you're hoping to heat up as well, or is this about what you can expect from Kutch these days?
I think it's kind of what you can expect from Andrew McCutchen now these days. He's, you know, former MVP, one of the greatest players in Pirates history, but obviously past his prime. Yeah, when you look at the OBP, you know, that's very, very refreshing, especially if you play in that sort of format, but there's no speed left. There's, you know, he's still driving in runs, and he's still hitting for average, and he's still scoring runs, but the pop just isn't there anymore. I think when you talk about guys at a certain age maybe morphing into different players as pitchers, I think it's now happening for Andrew McCutchen as a hitter.
That's interesting. Tell me more about that, Scott. When you say, because when pitchers you know, for lack of a better term, when they get a little older, right, and they lose a couple miles an hour on the fastball, they start to learn command, right, working both sides of the plate, how and when to use their off-speed pitches, you know, in terms of pitch counts, setting batters up, that sort of thing. When you're doing that as a hitter, what does that mean? Does that mean keeping a swing shorter, going opposite field a little bit more, not trying to go yard, maybe not doing this launch angle kind of craze, maybe trying to hit against the shift a little bit more, back control? What exactly do you mean when a hitter kind of gets older and maybe, you know, kind of morphs into the quote-unquote professional hitter?
Well, is Andrew McCutchen really that old, though? He's like, he's only 31. So
Fair enough, but like you said, he's not the MVP.
Not like he's very old, but, you know.
He's not in his prime anymore.
If you look at it at some of his deeper stats, you know, he's not hitting the ball to center field as much as he used to. Okay. He's pulling the ball a little bit more. And he's hitting to the opposite field a little bit more. His hard hit percentage is a 47.8. But it's
so
not
he's barreling it up still.
He's barreling up, but he's not carrying it out of the yard as much. He's hitting the ball hard, so there are some adjustments. You probably have to speak to McCutchen to find out exactly what those adjustments are in terms of mechanics. But, you know, there's something going on there where McCutchen has adjusted his game in order to survive. He's not very old, like I said, you know, 31 years old. But he's also obviously not the same player that Pirate fans grew up with. And he's changing games in terms of he's hitting more line drives too. 26.1 line drive rate, whereas his career mark is 21.4.
Sure.
And
so let me ask you real quick, Scott, with that, the line drive,
he's also
right?
hitting the ball on the ground less. So obviously okay. McCutchen has made some adjustments.
And
there were some of the past few years where injuries were also a factor.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because you mentioned kind of the line drive. He is still hitting the ball hard. Given that, to be honest, Scott, I think San Francisco would be a perfect ballpark for him, no? A lot of space out there, especially in the gaps. You know, could that actually be a great ballpark for him if he's hitting more line drives and is being this kind of doubles hitter?
Well, you know, that's what you're seeing already.
It's,
right. You know, that's where he is. And, you know, the on-base percentage is very good. The RBI numbers have not been embarrassing. But it just looks to me like Andrew McCutchen is a different sort of hitter when he's in the past and when San Francisco comes to town. You know, I'll talk to him about it. Mm-hmm. But you look at the fact he's hitting .258 at home with three home runs and 20 RBIs. He has most of his RBIs at home.
Interesting.
Batting average-wise, he's only hitting .246.
Right.
But his on-base percentage is .348.
.348, yeah. All right. So interesting. We would love it if you do, in fact, catch up with Kutch when they are in town.
I don't catch up with anybody. I hate to see – you know me. I got pet peeves. It's
sure.
like when people
I'm
say
learning,
I caught up with somebody, it's not like I was running after them, you know?
Okay. I mean, catch up on, like, what's going on in their lives, what's going on. Like I told you, I was at my 20-year high school reunion over the weekend. I caught up with a lot of people, found out about their lives, but I digress. Hey, Scott.
In that vein, I like it better.
Okay, fair enough. But wait, so yeah. Maybe I'm just treating Andrew McCutchen like your old friend, Scott. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yes.
You guys are old friends.
I wouldn't say, you know, McCutchen's a very blank guy when it comes to giving interviews.
Oh, yeah? Okay, well,
yeah.
Good to know. Hey, Scott, another game I want to ask you about. Braves-Padres from last night in San Diego. The Padres put up an 11 spot. We were talking about how we thought Julio Teheran might have been a good play yesterday. He only goes four, gives up four earned runs. The guy I want to ask you about, though.
Yeah,
Scott,
Teheran left this game with an undisclosed injury.
Okay, so that, you know, yeah. that probably explains
His fastball was sitting about 88, and they had to pull him out of the game.
Okay, so that definitely explains that, why he was only in there, and maybe why the Padres were able to kind of connect on him. The guy I want to ask you about, Scott, is someone we talked about in terms of kind of like a waiver pickup in the last week. I checked, and he's owned in around 20% of leagues. I'm talking about Travis Jankowski, Scott. Guy's hitting .309, and he's also got 10 stolen bases. Now, I thought of him last year when he came up as a kind of stolen base guy, and the 10 stolen bases are there, but he's hitting .309, Scott, on base of .377. I was surprised to see that he wasn't a little bit more heavily owned. He's around 20%, depending on your kind of leagues. A little bit less owned in Yahoo, a little bit around that in CBS. But what do you think about Jankowski? Valuable, especially if you're looking for steals?
Yeah, I love him. I have him in the GST league where I'm back in first place after last night.
Nice.
Battling it out with Joe Galina and Cha-Cha.
The fantasy
right
Jesus, the fantasy Jesus.
Yeah, but you know
nice.
What's weird? You know what's weird about their team?
And I love Cha-Cha, Bronx boy from, you know, Puerto Rican from the
yeah,
Bronx.
Yeah, but I think they're letting Cha-Cha do the counting for this ball club because last year they won the league. Congratulations. They were called Holy Trinity. It was
okay.
It was Galina, Cha-Cha, and Florio, right?
Got
Mike
it.
Florio.
Got
Florio
it, my best
left
friend forever.
To go to the BFFs.
Right.
Now it's just Joe, Galina, and Cha-Cha,
and Cha-Cha.
Still calling themselves Holy Trinity.
Oh, well, listen, hey, Joe Galina, Cha-Cha out there, if you need a third member, if you need the Holy Spirit, your boy Speeds the Spitting Statistician is always available. Holler at
yeah,
your
Yeah, but
boy.
It's not a Holy Trinity if you got two guys.
And that's what I'm saying. That's why I call myself the Holy Spirit, to, you know, Father, Son, and all, and I'll try and round it out for next year. But you do like Jankowski. So, listen, guys,
yeah,
he's a good source of steals.
I picked him up. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I picked him up. He's a good source of steals. Right now, the BABIP is at .375. So, of course, that has to come down. You know, I don't think he's a .309 hitter. But good source of speed and has definitely made some adjustments. When he came up last year, he wasn't quite ready. But, you know, he spent enough time in the minors now where he's certainly ready. He's locked into that lineup, and he's going to hit for average, and he's going to hit for speed.
Hey, let me ask you something. He came up kind of with Hunter Renfro, right? Kind of at the two of them were kind of together. For some reason, Scott, and maybe this is a poor comparison, when I heard about Renfro and Jankowski coming up, you know, about 2 years ago, let's say, it was kind of the same as like a Conforto and Nemo, you know, two outfielders that were really prized in the farm system that both came up. I guess Conforto has kind of obviously done more than any of the other four. But if kids like this, if Jankowski and Renfro can kind of put it together, is there any future for the Padres in the short term?
I think so. Franmil Reyes hit his fifth home run last night. You're starting to see the power from him from a fantasy perspective.
They spent the money on Hosmer.
This is their outfield of the future. I don't think they want Jose Perel as a regular starter. I know some people have him as a sixth fantasy outfielder, but I cut him in Tout Wars to pick up Jankowski. So, I think this is their outfield of the future. I think for the Mets, they have a tough decision when Cespedes comes back because Nemo's playing so well. I don't compare them in terms of scouting reports because Conforto hits for better average and power than Renfro will. You know, Renfro's more of a pure power guy to me. And, the other talking, Jankowski's more of a pure speed guy. Than the other two.
I hear you. Let me ask you this, Scott. You talked about how they have a choice with Nemo, right? And we also know how Cespedes is off the injured, right? We also know that Jay Bruce is not really doing it banged up. He's got the plantar stuff. Would they ever – is it time to start considering Cespedes at first base?
I don't think that'll ever happen.
No? If they need room for Nemo?
No.
They want – you know?
They've trained Bruce there. And again,
Bruce isn't doing anything.
I know, because he's playing hurt. He's got the plantar fasciitis in the back.
You want to limit the amount Cespedes has to move around.
But you know what? Fans keep talking about moving somebody to first base. I keep saying it's not going to happen except for maybe once a week at most.
Right.
The Mets are not giving up on Adrian Gonzalez. Now, they're not playing him 6 days a week, but he's a leader in the clubhouse. He's a leader on the field. He plays better defense than any first baseman that's there. And when he does get in there 4 days a week, he's been hitting lately. So Adrian Gonzalez is not going anywhere. It's going to be a tough decision right now because
Nemo's performing.
Nemo's performing. Bruce is not. You know, I think when Bruce comes back, when Nemo comes back, when Cespedes comes back, it would not surprise me if they put Bruce on the DL because he's been
fighting through it. But then, they could actually say, hey, why don't you take a rest for 10 plus?
Yeah, you have to have Conforto in center.
Sure.
Bruce is not playing well, and they're still rolling him out there. Right now, Jose Bautista, you watch him in batting practice and games, you know, he's completely launching the ball all the time. I don't know if he changed his launch angle since he got cut by Atlanta, but the guy is killing it every time he gets into the game. It seems like he hits a double every time he gets into the game, but they're not playing him every day. The Mets have some outfield depth, and while they have offensive problems, you know, they have some decisions to make there. If you're going to use first base as that solution, you can't do it more than 2 days a week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so like you said,
there's no precedent for thinking that with Cespedes.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I'm trying to figure it out because you have a tough choice. You want to keep Nemo in the lineup, so I'm just trying to brainstorm ways for it to happen. I'll tell you one way it can happen.
That major league
Scott.
Teams don't do that, though. They don't brainstorm things. They would have to train Cespedes over
Taking ground balls and batting practice and things like that. But I will say this, Scott, they get relief because I know they got a big interleague Subway Series coming up. But it is at Citi Field at the end of the weekend, so there'll still be no DH. Across town, Yankees were in a doubleheader, Scott. They split them with the Tigers, winning the first one 7-4, losing the first one 4-2. Severino continues to impress. Luis Severino, Scott, goes 8 innings, gives up 1, strikes out 10+. We already know about him. He's a top 10 starter. We don't have to talk much about it. Scott, you're not playing Roto Cleo with us anymore. Guess what, though? I decided to go homer. I haven't picked him yet. I pick Aaron Judge, and he goes 0-5 with 5 strikeouts, Scott.
Yeah, the doubleheader.
He went 0-9, right?
He went 0-9 with 8 strikeouts.
Maybe I gave him the kiss of death by picking him in Roto Cleo. I thought I could get an advantage because I had the doubleheader. You know, I was splitting hairs on the rules there, and he goes 0-9 with 8 strikeouts, Scott.
Yeah, I was saying Greg Bird. He actually went yard in the first game.
That's why you got to keep playing, man. And then I tried to go away from the obvious choice. Jake went Severino with the obvious choice, right? I think I went Tropiano, and I lost there as well. But the Yanks split the doubleheader. What's there to say? You talk about the extra base hits also when you were mentioned with the Mets. My man Miguel Andujar is an extra base hitting machine. I think he leads all rookies in extra base hits. It's going to be interesting what they do with him when people like Brandon Drury are finally ready for the Yankees as well.
Yeah, I think when Drury comes back, this was a guy that, talked some people out of Arizona, and they were very high on Drury and saying going to the Yankees was perfect for him. So if an injury happens, Drury would be an immediate pickup. Andujar's taking advantage of the opportunity. He's been one of the best fantasy rookies, period. And it was interesting yesterday between Giancarlo Stanton and Mike Fiers, and then Mike Fiers nearly hitting him with the pitch. The two nearly got into a fight. Then Stanton homered off him, and he pointed to him. As bad as people think that Stanton is playing, he still has 13 home runs.
Right.
I would still try to buy on him in fantasy.
Sure. And he's on a pace to still get, high 30s this season? I'll take that. So is Aaron Judge. So is Gary Sanchez. Didi with double digits as well on that squad. That offense is not a problem. Let's keep it moving, though, Scott, because, I don't want to belabor the point with the Yankees too much. There's always enough of that coming out of me anyway. Last game yesterday with the Angels and the Royals. Scott, I want to ask you legitimately, who is this kid, Jeffrey Marte? He goes 4-for-4. I don't know much about him. Can you give me a thumbnail sketch on this kid, Marte?
Yeah, he hits when he gets to play, but he doesn't play often enough. Maybe more of a daily guy than anything. The thing that strikes me from the Angels is that Justin Upton had 3 RBIs and homered yesterday. Remember that in daily, that he's about to go on a hot streak. Marte hit .278 with a .329, but he's only got 78 at bats.
Okay.
He's not going to play consistently, so there's really nothing to see there. On the other side, Salvador Perez went yard for the 10th time. He's been an excellent source of power. You certainly want a better OBP if you play in that kind of format because he's under 300, but he's never been an OBP kind of guy. Another rough start for Danny Duffy after 2 quality starts. Kind of scuffled yesterday. And again, if your favorite team is looking for pitching, I don't want to hear the name Danny Duffy. He's way too inconsistent.
No, I hear that. Trust me, he's not the guy I'm targeting. Let me ask you one more thing about the Royals, Scott. About a month ago, everybody was real high on the breakout potential of Jorge Soler. Has he cooled off a little bit?
No, he's actually started to heat up again recently.
He doubled yesterday, but it's now coming back.
He homered on Sunday, so it seems like Soler is getting back on a hot streak right now. I'll never forget what one scout told me during the offseason. It said, that the guy is dumb as rocks.
He would have to
rely strictly on his power, and he's been doing it. Yeah, but Soler went on a cold streak for a good spurt of May, but now that it seems like it's turning to June, he's starting to heat up again.
Yeah.
I have been 2 leagues, so I'm happy with it.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
So you're ahead of the curve there, as always.
Yeah, it's like I didn't want Soler if they would base what I told, but, I got him so late. I got him very late in, one of my drafts, and in other drafts, I picked him up off of waivers early in the year.
Yeah. Listen, Scott, and that brings up a good point in fantasy sports, right? There's no real absolutes, You can say you don't want him, but at a certain point, he's worth the value. I hate that also when I hear, this player is untradeable on my team. You know what I mean? Clayton Kershaw is untradeable. I'm like, oh yeah? What if I offer you Mookie Betts and Mike Trout and Chris Sale? Then he's tradable. It's all a question of perspective. So I don't like those absolutes in fantasy.
I always say that. Nothing in fantasy sports is absolute.
Exactly. Great. You have Mike Trout? Absolutely. Cool. What if I offer you Judge and Altuve? You know what I mean? But I digress. Hey, Scott, I wanted to stop here on the Angels and Royals because the Angels also have the winner of our first face of baseball matchup. We had the 8 seed Albert Pujols against the 9 seed Clayton Kershaw, and it was close, Scott. It was close, but Albert Pujols wins our first matchup as the eighth seed. He'll be moving on 53% to 47%. I know you were high on Clayton Kershaw because of more like the present day, but it looks like the people were kind of reviewing it based on like his resume and standing on that. Here's what I want to ask you, Scott, and it goes into our matchup for today. With Jake in the second hour here on Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, I got into a conversation and I threw out the claim that I thought Albert Pujols was the best right-handed hitter of our generation. Okay? And Jake, you know how Jake always takes issue with anything, you know, anybody's claim. He was like, oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. And then we were trying to brainstorm some others, right? And there's two that are still playing in Mike Trout and Miguel Cabrera. And I also brought up Manny Ramirez for consideration in terms of best righty of, say, like this generation. So I wanted to ask you for your take on this. Pujols, Manny, Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera, would you agree those are the best right-handed hitters of this generation? And if so, how would you rank those guys, Scott?
Oh, that's tough, too.
It's tough, because, right? But am I right that all four of them aren't in consideration?
How far back do we go with the generation?
The generation? I don't know. I mean, like, of that, that would be Manny,
right? Because
you're talking,
right? Manny, is like, that's like the 2000s, you know.
That's still a generation.
Then how do you put anybody above Barry Bonds?
Was Barry Bonds a righty?
Well, Bonds was a lefty, I'm sorry.
Right, I'm talking about the best right-handed hitter of this generation, right? And so, I mean, that's the thing. You're right, you're going to have to go back. But would you say that those four all have, belong in the conversation?
I would say so. I think when you look at the fact that Trout gives you everything, including speed, I'd probably put him at the top of the list. McCutcheon was there for a while, but...
Yeah, but he had like a short stint of maybe two or three
seasons.
It
didn't last long enough.
Right.
It was
right.
longer
I mean,
than two
Manny,
or three seasons.
Pujols, these guys, Cabrera.
It was longer than two or three years, though. It was longer
but
than
it's not
two
like
or three
Manny
years.
Or Cabrera or Pujols.
No.
We've been doing it for a decade, you know? So I thought it was interesting.
Okay.
You know, I do think it was interesting.
Okay. So I would probably put Pujols top of the list.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Trout top of the list for me.
Okay.
Miguel Cabrera and Pujols, that's very tough one to call.
They're
both
tough.
They're both very similar hitters.
Exactly.
Manny,
that's
too. That's incredibly tough.
Manny, too.
And who else did we mention as well?
Manny Ramirez.
Yeah.
It's whoever is fourth out of those four, I'd sign up for their career right now.
Manny towards the latter end of his career, though, started to fall off. So
fair enough. But you talk about...
I would probably say Pujols and Cabrera is so damn tough for me.
Right.
It's, you know, I'd have to dive into the numbers, like going right off the top of my head.
Sure.
Well,
that's sometimes what fans do at the barbershop and at the bar, Scott. You know, we don't have to have the BABIP for everybody.
I mean, Ortiz was a lefty, so he doesn't count.
Ortiz is a lefty. Bonds a lefty. Ichiro a lefty. You know, so I'm talking, we're talking righties.
Gary Sheffield is one of the great right-handed.
I hear that, and trust me, I love his stance. He looked dangerous in the batter's box.
Not
quite
that league.
Right, but he would be a step below, I agree, a step below.
I think you have to put Piazza in there, too.
Sure, I would put him in the Sheffield step below. Jim Tomei? But he was just more powerful. Oh, he was a lefty.
Tomei was a lefty. And I would definitely put Piazza above Sheffield.
Okay, fair enough. But it's an interesting conversation. Let me get it to this, Scott, because our matchup for today features two of those guys. You know, we're talking about the face of baseball, so it might be a little bit different. But our matchup today is the number 4 seed, Mike Trout, against the number 13 seed, Miguel Cabrera, Scott. So I think Trout will probably run away and win this one, but we should give Miguel Cabrera his due because, you know, he belongs in the conversation of one of the best right-handed hitters of the last 25 years for sure.
I know, but I got to go with Trout because, you know, you look at the speed, but I guess but it's not about puts up the better stats. It's who's more recognizable and ambassador of the game.
Absolutely.
And I don't think Cabrera – I think Cabrera is going to go unrealized in that respect because I think he's very well recognized in the Latin community. And
that's
a lot of our voters may not be aware of that.
Yep.
And to be honest, some of the Latin players that are on this bracket, they're not as out in front, you know, doing interviews sometimes because of language barriers. And like you mentioned, they may be big enough.
Cabrera is not
one
of those guys, though.
But I'm saying generally speaking, what some of these Latin guys may not get at the same kind of buzz or notoriety. You know, for example, Scott, I mean, Adrian
Cabrera, Cabrera will talk to both the English and the Spanish reporters.
Okay.
And,
okay.
You know, he's Gardner's a very good interviewer, a good guy, but it just seems like there's something with Trout that he's bigger, where he,
right.
'Cause he's considered the best player in the game, period, whereas Cabrera is not regarded, was never regarded as the best player in the game, period.
Well, that's because he was mostly, Barry Bonds was there most of his career. But that is our poll question, Scott. The 4-seed Mike Trout against the 13-seed Miguel Cabrera. Get on and join us if you want. At Spittin' Speeds, at Scotty Roto X, at The All In Kid, and of course, at FNTSY Radio. If you want to join the show, you could also holler at us at 844-843-6879. Scott, we are off and running. We got some news and notes to get to. We will preview the day in Daily Fantasy, and you spent some time. You didn't catch up with him, but you spent some time with Kyle Schwarber and when the Cubs were in town. We're going to hear what you had to say with him when we come back on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It is Roto Experts in the Morning. Come on back after the break. The King, Scott Engel, the Spittin' Statistician Speeds, Dane Martinez. We continue to cock-a-doodle-do it on a Tuesday in June right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Come on right back.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money, and lots of it, by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock Daily Fantasy Sports.
In the morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, the Spittin' Statistician and the King, bright and early on a Tuesday morning. We're telling you so many ways you could join the show if you want to talk to us about the face of baseball. Holler at us at 844-843-6879. You can holler at us about anything. The King knows all. The Spittin' Statistician will give you his point of view, whether you like it or not. You could also hit us up on the poll question on Twitter. We're doing a face of baseball bracket. We got the 4-seed Mike Trout up against the 13-seed Miguel Cabrera. Neither one of us expected to be as close as our 8-9 matchup of yesterday. Albert Pujols moving on. Hey, Scott, I know we got to get to some things. You know, we got to get people ready for DFS today. We got to also, I know you spent a couple of minutes with Kyle Schwarber. I have one piece of news, though, that I do want to still get out there. They once again extended the leave of absence for Roberto Ozuna. Do you see that, Scott? They extended it another week. The funny part to me on this is they're doing it week by week. You know, it's like, oh, and now we're extending it another week. Oh, we're extending it another week. You know, I think his hearing on it is coming up soon. But, like, can't they just be like, listen, we're suspending him indefinitely so that we have even more clarity? Because now you have this idea, like, maybe Ozuna will come back. What do you think about this, Scott?
I think we knew that. I didn't know exactly how they were going to do it by the books, that we might not see him for a while again. His trial is to June 18th, so now they extend it to about the trial date. I'm just treating it like an injury, like he's out indefinitely.
Okay, and that's the way we should. You know, we've talked about this a lot. Will it be Tapera? Will it be Clippard? Will it be a rotating door? We're going to be looking at the George Kurtz article about closers tomorrow, so we'll definitely dive into that one again. But Scott, like we were talking about, you spent a little bit of time with Kyle Schwarber when he was in town this weekend with the Cubs. You know, it sounds like he's making a number of adjustments, both offensively and defensively. What'd you talk to Kyle about?
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah.
His on-base percentage Well, coming into this year, it was a very disappointing season last year after the postseason heroics in 2016. But the on-base percentage is back up. And you know, something I didn't talk to him about, like he wasn't expected to do much against lefties, but he's hitting 323 against him this year. So far, so good for Schwarber.
Absolutely. Schwarber, you know, coming off that big-time injury years past, you know, still mashing for the Chicago Cubs. Here it is, the king, Scott Engel, with Cubs former catcher, now outfielder, Kyle Schwarber.
Scott Engel here with Kyle Schwarber. Kyle, you got an on-base percentage this year of almost 380. Do you feel like that's a product of being more selective so far this year?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, the more, you know, patient you can be in, you know, being selective to your pitch is only going to be beneficial to you. And, you know, for us hitters, you know, what we really want to do is try to attack our pitch and hit that mistake until two strikes, and you just got to battle.
The team led the NL with the on-base percentage in May. Do you think that's like a team-wide approach as well?
You know, I feel like we all did a really good job and, you know, just being able to hone into what we want to do. And that's, you know, obviously go up there, try to get our pitch, and when we do get our pitch, drive it, and, you know, be stingy up there.
You're seems like you're swinging less outside the zone as well. Do you notice that you're doing that as product of design?
You know, I think that you know, there's a lot of things going on that's going on good, and that's one of them, and just got to be able to continue that and keep the eye there and be selective, like you said.
And do you think as a result, like, you're hitting more line drives this year? At least the numbers indicate that.
Yeah. You know, I feel like that, you know, I'm just trying to put the barrel on the ball, you know what I mean? Whenever I'm up there, that's just what I want to do. And, you know, because if I, you know, just worry about putting the barrel on the ball, I feel like good things are going to happen. You know, I'm not worried about launching or anything like that.
What about defensively? You feel like you really improved this year, and is something you worked very hard on?
Yeah, you know, this felt like that the off-season work has paid off, and we have a really good group of outfielders here, and being able to watch them go about their work, and being able to talk to them and listen to the Will Venable, our outfield coach, and be able to ask him questions and get honest answers, I feel like that, you know, it's been a big help.
Your uncle also played minor league ball. Has he been a help to you as well?
He was actually my high school coach. So, you know, he had a big impact on me and, you know, at an early age and first trying to teach me about, you know, the accountability part of baseball. And, you know, he went through that minor league grind and was able to shine some light on some things. So definitely a big help.
What about you play fantasy football? What about when you're the drafted instead of the drafter and people say to you, hey, Kyle, I have you on my fantasy team?
You know, I guess it's cool. You know, I feel like that, you know, whenever that is, you know, obviously it's a part of, you know, it's what we do. This is what we do. You know, we show up to the field and we play our game. And, you know, it's funny whenever I get a text or something from, like a friend, you know, saying, hey, you know, I just got you on my team. You know, so, you know, it's cool. But it doesn't really have an effect on anything we do at all.
What about football-wise? How did you do last year?
It felt good. You know, just, you know, I felt like that my team was good. Just didn't perform. You know, I made the playoffs, but didn't make it much past that. But looking forward to, you know, doing it all over again.
There you have it, a couple of minutes right there with the King, Scott Engel, and Kyle Schwarber. Hey, Scott, I thought it was interesting you talked about how he needed that offseason to get better in the outfield, you know. And it's interesting because fans, you know, sometimes are like, yeah, no problem. You know, if he can catch, he can go out there and play outfield, you know. But he talked about, you know, the outfield coaches and learning from the other veteran outfielders and really needing an entire offseason to kind of adjust to a new position. Scotty. I've lost Scotty, but that's okay.
No, I'm here.
Oh,
I'm here.
Hey, Scotty. You know,
he's had a few bumps, but he's certainly played better defense. What I really took away from that, though, is, like, you know, one thing he much I talked about his approach that on Fangraphs, it's showing that he's not chasing pitches and his own swing percentage is down. But he said, this is nothing by design. He said, I haven't worried about launch angle or anything like right. that. You know, Schwarber has just made – a lot of guys are really getting into launch angle. And Schwarber admitted to me that, you know, he's not one of those guys. Then he, when the fantasy part, like I said yesterday with Rizzo, he said a lot of people text him about fantasy baseball. That's how they keep up on, you know, how people – view them, etc. But he stayed healthy. The on-base percentage is at 384 right now. It's went up since the interview that I did with him over the weekend. And, you know, that's why you play in an OBP league. You definitely drafted Schwarber earlier. Spent a high bid on him because you're getting power and OBP. Mm-hmm. You know, he's hitting in the 260 range. You're hoping right now you could just get 250 and 30 home runs out of him where you drafted him. There's going to be a little bit of regression, I think, in the batting average and the OBP, but he's had a very encouraging season so far, and I really enjoyed talking to him.
Absolutely. We'll see if he gets the royal treatment, the bump, after talking to the king, like you
said. Oh, he homered that
night.
There you
go. There you go. And like you said, his on-base or his average has gone up a little bit even since after you spoke to him. One question about this, Scott. I noticed that when you're talking to players, one of the kind of closeout questions you usually ask them is about their understanding or passion or lack thereof for fantasy. Like, do they like it when people scream, hey, you're helping my fantasy team out, or do they not really care? Generally speaking, I know you have talked to many, many athletes, you know, in your Hall of Fame career, Scott. Would you say, you know, the percentage of athletes who care or who know about it is definitely growing? Would you say a lot of, or most of the players are like, eh, I don't care about that? Or are people like, are the athletes out there really aware and sensitive and, you know, do a good chunk play themselves, generally speaking? I hear it one by one as you're talking to them. But what's your general sense of how much they care about fantasy?
In terms of football, every major league clubhouse has that as a fantasy football league, and the guy's incredibly passionate about it. Now, over my career, that's why I've made friends with a lot of major league players, and it's different for me.
They're looking to you for advice, right?
Ballpark, you know, than the average reporter, because they know me as the fantasy guy. They'll be able to ask me questions when their season comes, so they'll be more willing to grant me an interview. When I hit the parks in like July and August, it's like I've had some very, very funny stories over the years where when Derek Lowe was playing and I approached his locker when he was with the Braves very early on, I think it was like 2011, and I approached his locker and he said, I'm not talking to anybody. I said, oh, somebody told me you play fantasy football. I wanted you to talk to you about fantasy football. All of a sudden he goes, fantasy football? He goes, why? And I told him who I was. He goes, everybody else get away from my locker. I'm not saying anything today. I suck. Write that. And then he pointed to a clubhouse chair and he goes, you there now. I said, I'm not allowed to sit in those chairs as media. And he said, you sit now. Went to got his lunch, totally picked my brain. And also the card table, you know, a lot of guys play cards like before the games. And the card table is like a sacred place. You're not allowed near it as a media member. It's in the middle of the room. The 2013 Braves called me over to the card table and were picking my brain while they were playing cards.
Awesome.
So I get different relationships. Like, when it's a great Braves story. Like when B.J. Upton was with the Braves, they had just had the draft and they came back to Citi Field in August and they all had jerseys in their lockers of their first round picks. And the first pick was for B.J. Upton was Peyton Manning. So he had a Peyton Manning jersey in his locker. He took pictures with it. He was talking to me about it. All these guys are so aware of it through football. Most of them don't know how baseball works, but will spend time asking me how it works. So they're all aware of it because a lot of the fans will say things to them. Like I had LaTroy Hawkins, the first time I talked to one of the Knights, this guy's in the game, say to me, I hate fantasy sports because people always yell at me from the stands. But then he said, I just mean baseball. I love football. It's and guys will get involved. They love football. I remember when Prince Fielder was with the Brewers, him and Casey McGee shared a team. Prince Fielder wrote the check. Casey McGee ran the team. They won the championship. The next year, they split up and were arguing in front of me about whose championship it was. Like, I ran the team. Well, I wrote the check.
That's funny.
Everybody's aware of it because even the PR guys play.
Sure.
You know, I'm friends with Mike Vassallo of the Brewers.
Gotcha.
He plays, so everybody is aware of it. Like, even the broadcasters. John Schmoltz is a fanatical fantasy football player. And now you get the younger guys coming up through the minors, and you get to talk to them. And they played fantasy baseball growing up. Like, Eric Hosmer would tell me that he played fantasy baseball growing up, et cetera. And, you know, to be drafted now is like, you know, that means something to them. But there are some guys who just like, yeah, they hear about it, and they don't care about it. I once have Cliff Lee told me that he couldn't care less, you know, about it. I had Alex Rodriguez actually tell me, when he was with the Yankees, I think in 2012, I approached him about it, and I asked him, you know, you're on the cover of every fantasy magazine, the number one pick. Alex looked at me, and it was almost like half, he meant it, but he said it with a smile, too. He goes, I couldn't care less, he said.
Fair enough. You know, yes. I do think it's interesting. You mentioned
This is when A-Rod was not well-regarded either.
Sure. You mentioned everybody from Derek Lowe to Boss Man Jr. But it is interesting. When you talk about fantasy sports, almost as like a team-building thing, a camaraderie, the same way people play cards, you know, on flights or in the clubhouse. It's a way to keep people together. That's why we love fantasy sports. Everybody out there is probably playing with childhood friends. You know, it is a way to build that thing together. Absolutely. But Scott,
I talk to guys who don't play in the clubhouse leagues. They just play at home with their friends, and it's a way for them to keep in touch with their college buddies, et cetera. You know, they like maybe they will or they won't be in the clubhouse league, but you know, they're definitely playing with their friends. And you talk about some guys play cards. I remember the first time I met Lorenzo Cain, he was sitting in the corner of the locker room, like looking through his cheat sheets.
Right. No, it's interesting. And you mentioned also, you said how Hosmer and others, the first time when they get drafted, it's interesting. The one analogy I'll make is a lot of, at these days, young kids, they care about, like, their matting rating, you know, in the video game, because they came up playing this game as kids. It's always interesting to see a little bit of insight how the athletes view it themselves. That's why the King, Scott Engel, is a Hall of Famer. You will not get stuff like this anywhere else except the Fantasy Sports Radio Network here on Roto Experts in the Morning. But, Scott, we got to get people ready for today.
Here's one more, before we go on.
We don't have a lot of time. We got to get people ready for today. Go ahead. Tell your stories.
No, real quick about Jake got into this, and I had a phone conversation with me. He goes, you've never talked to Ryan Zimmerman recently, right? Ryan Zimmerman hates the media. I go, no, Ryan Zimmerman talks to me all the time. What are you talking about?
There you go.
Ryan Zimmerman loves fantasy football.
The King, Scott Engel, with access unlike any other. And it's interesting, as soon as they hear he's the fantasy guy, they open up to the King, Scott Engel. So you need to, you know, keep it locked right here every Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m., Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Scott, we also do a lot with DailyRoto.com. They make millionaires over there. We talked to Colin Drew. We talked to Mike Leone. But listen, yesterday, you know, if you played the night slate, there was only like three games to choose from. Everybody back in action today, a full slate, Scott. And we got a lot of aces on the hill. Max Scherzer, Corey Kluber. We got Carlos Martinez going tonight. And we have the return of Madison Bumgarner. Let me ask you this, Scott. You were out celebrating, you know, obviously the graduation of your son, Sean, last week one day. And it was the day that Kershaw came back. I had Mike Leone on. And we were talking about how in his first start back, Kershaw had never faced more than 20 batters, how we didn't think he was necessarily a good buy for his price because of the stamina that he might have in his first start out. What about Madison Bumgarner? This guy is a country hoss. Do we have the same kind of concerns for Bumgarner today? Do you think he'll be on a pitch count? Do you think he might not go long enough to get a quality start or a win? Are you any concerns with Bumgarner for DFS, his first game out tonight?
Seasonal, of course, you locked him in because he's bad Madison Bumgarner. For tonight, with our other options on the slate, not just the ones you mentioned, I think you should veer away from Bumgarner. He's more going to be more of a contrarian play. It won't surprise anybody if he comes back and throws six innings of shutout ball, but you know, you're not going to get a complete game shutout or anything like that. You have to worry about what kind of length he goes. I'm always very cautious when a guy comes back from the DL. In my weekly league, I actually like kept Noah Syndergaard reserved because he's coming back on Sunday and he's facing the Yankees, and it'll be his first start off the DL. I don't want to screw with that. So I think you have to be cautious here. Usually want to be aggressive when it comes to DFS. But you know, Max Scherzer, the guy is as the guys in DailyRoto.com this morning talk about, you know, they have like a 11 strikeout projection for him tonight. It's just, but everybody's going to be going Scherzer.
Right. So here's my question. Here's a guy like that I don't have to pay as much money for. Okay, he's got a great shift in ballpark going from Atlanta to San Diego. I'm talking about Sean Newcomb, Scott. Sean Newcomb, I think, you know, he's kind of in that middle price range. I think he's pitching well. The Padres offense, you know, I guess they did put up 11 runs, you know, yesterday, but I'm generally not afraid of them. I kind of like Sean Newcomb today because, you know, he's striking out people. The Padres strike out a lot. I mean, what do you think about that? I'm going to spend a little bit less money, and I might target Sean Newcomb tonight.
Oh, yeah, I love him. He's only given up six earned runs and six starts this month. You know, the one start against the Red Sox wasn't good. Three innings, three earned runs, but all the other ones, he had three consecutive games where he didn't allow a run. Two of the last three, he's allowed three total runs. I love Sean Newcomb. You know, this guy is actually making an all-star bid in his rookie year. Other than that, like some other under-the-radar type of guys, Stephen Wright against the against the Detroit Tigers, very interesting. He's pitched well out of the pen. They could always go to him for a spot start. Excuse me.
God bless you,
Scott. Allergic to Red Sox. I like Stephen Wright a lot tonight, maybe as that second pitcher. And you want to take a flyer, said prospect Zach Littell is coming up for the Twins, and he's opposing Lucas Giolito, which gives him a good shot for the win.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm okay with hammering against Lucas Giolito. The guy's still pitching to, I believe, a 7 ERA. Let me ask you one thing about Stephen Wright, Scott. When I, you know, last season I was hosting DFS Lineup Lock with our guy Tony Cincata. We're talking with, you know, Benny Riccardi a bunch as well. And they told me they generally do not pay attention to batter versus pitcher data. But Stephen Wright would be an exception. And the reason why, of course, is because he features the knuckleball, right? And so some guys just can't hit the knuckleball and others, you know, have success. Do you believe in that, that maybe batter versus pitcher data is more important with a guy like Stephen Wright because of the knuckleball?
I think that's very astute, and you got it from some good sources.
Oh, so it's not just because of me. It's only when I get it from someone else, right, Scott? I'm joking.
Look, if you want to beat yourself up, I'm not going to help you. Okay. you know that's.
But
not
Stephen
what
Wright,
I meant.
Batter versus pitcher. Yeah,
no,
I'm
but
joking. Batter
versus
pitcher.
I know you are. Batter versus pitcher. You know, you usually don't pay a lot of attention because the sample size is small, or if it's large, it could be from earlier in the career. With the knuckleball, yeah, it's generally very tough to hit, but then again, you don't know exactly what guys have been watching film and doing extra BP, etc., so it's not totally foolproof. It's just, like, not a good team against a guy who's been pitching well, and I just like the matchup.
All right. Fair enough. And as we mentioned, you know, he's facing the Tigers lineup that hasn't really done much. So there are some options today. Obviously, the Klubers and the Scherzers, if you want to spend some money. Scott and I both like a little bit of Sean Newcomb. So that could be an option as well. Maybe I'll go with one of those guys at Roto Clio later on in the show. I do want to let
when
you guys
got the
know.
The Dodgers and the Pirates, that's going to be a really good pitching matchup between Ross Stripling and Joe Musgrove.
Listen, Stripling's been sick lately.
Stripling has been like, I think Matt Modica pointed out on Twitter, like, I think like in terms of like strikeouts per game or something like that, he was the third best pitcher in the majors in the month of May. I would look for Stripling to outdo Musgrove, but you can't trust the Dodgers to give him the run support necessarily. This is going to be a tough game, but I think if I'm rolling out multiple lineups, I have to have some shares of Stripling.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another nice little nugget there from the King, Scott Engel. Also want to tell you guys, if you want to play DFS and have a chance to win two tickets to the 2018 World Series, go on over to dailyroto.com/DKMS. There, you'll find the link to free DFS baseball every single day. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, and they're looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. Listen. For so many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival when you have blood cancer. And in baseball, if you hit 300, you're an all-star. But for 30% of patients only to be able to find a matching donor in their families, that's just not good enough, and that's where you come in, okay? Go on over to dailyroto.com/DKMS, find out how you could register, and now if you're a match, you can really help support someone struggling with this disease with a bone marrow donation, okay? This is not in the fantasy world. This is in the real world. You could also win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game. Check it out. Go on over to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. We got a poll question up as well. We're doing that face of baseball brackets. You know, we had a tight matchup in the 8-9 yesterday. Mike Trout, however, continuing to run away from Miguel Cabrera, although Scott and I both consider them two of the best right-handed hitters of this generation. Real quick, Scott, I know we only got a couple of minutes. You know, the Major League Baseball draft was yesterday as well. Two things that real quick I want to touch on. One, and yes, I was going to touch on this even before it turned out to be the Yankees who drafted this kid, number 23 overall. Kid's name is Anthony Siegler. He's a catcher down in Georgia in high school. He's the starting catcher for Team USA 18 and under baseball. But here's the thing. This is basically, Scott, like Shohei Ohtani plus Pat Venedet. You know, he's a switch pitcher and a switch hitter. He plays catcher. He throws out runners. He runs himself. This kid does it all, lefty and righty, pitching and position player. When we talk about, like, the bullpen days and a six-day rotation, would you ever see, you know, teams having more of these guys that can try to lengthen their roster? This is a pretty interesting case that this kid can do it all, huh, Scott?
Yeah, but how many of these guys are you going to find?
I don't know.
At the game at a high level? Not a lot, right?
Not a lot. That's why this guy is so amazing, and he's going to probably be a catcher in the minor league.
All right, let's
system.
Get it over with. The Yankees had the most amazing pick in the draft, right?
I just think it's interesting. Yeah. Listen, with the game evolving, you know, having the opener, you need, in Tampa Bay, having Shohei Ohtani, maybe you need these kind of Swiss Army knives out there. Real quick, the other guy I want to mention.
There's not too many of them, no. I mean, to me, what's more interesting is the Giants taking Joey Bart of Georgia Tech, the top catcher in the nation. Great defense and can hit for some pop, signaling that, maybe Buster Posey's eventual replacement. Casey Mize was the first pick of the draft with the Tigers and definitely the best player in the country coming out of Auburn. But you know, they're worried about his injury history.
Yeah, and also then you got the ninth pick by Oakland, a guy named Kyler Murray. And the other interesting part about this guy is slated to be the starting quarterback for the Oklahoma Sooners. Faced with that decision, what would you do? Be quarterback big-time college, or you just got drafted and, you know, in the top 10? Would you pursue baseball, football, or both, Scott?
Depended on what I liked better and what I thought I was better at.
But money would have no consideration?
I think, you know, money's got to be one consideration, but what do you really love to play more? You're going to make a lot of money no matter which way you go. When you play baseball, though, you have less of a chance of injury,
right,
et cetera. But the A's are reportedly fine with it. You know, that's why they took it at number 9. They have to take a shot because if he decides to play baseball, maybe he's the best guy in this draft, period.
It could be. It's very interesting. We'll follow all these kids as they progress, and maybe they'll be on fantasy teams one day, and the King, Scott Angle, can talk to them in the locker room. When we come back, the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, joins us, Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Talk to you tomorrow, Scott.
Casey Mize out of Auburn University with the first overall pick of the 2018 MLB draft on Monday night. Major League Baseball has extended the administrative leave for Blue Jays closer Roberto Osuna for another week through June 11th. Osuna's first court date for his charge of assault is on June 18th. Rays starter Anthony Banda is set to undergo Tommy John surgery. Banda, who was acquired over the offseason from the Diamondbacks in the Steven Souza trade, is expected to be sidelined until 2020. The White Sox activated DH and infielder Matt Davidson from the 10-day disabled list. Davidson missed exactly 10 days with a minor back issue. Braves star rookie Ronald Acuna has yet to resume baseball activities. David O'Brien of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports that Acuna is progressing but is still sore. Francisco Liriano is likely to make a minor league rehab start before returning to the Tigers rotation. He's out with a hamstring injury. And the Twins signed catcher Cameron Rupp to a minor league contract. Rupp had been at AAA Round Rock in the Rangers organization before opting out of his deal last week. And in the NFL, the Jets' banner offseason continues. Their fourth-round pick, tight end Chris Herndon, was arrested for DUI just before dawn on Saturday after causing a major accident in New Jersey. And after a strange 24 hours of misdirection and denials, Michael Kendrick's agent confirmed the former Eagle has signed with the Cleveland Browns. I'm Dan Strafford, and this has been your Fantasy Sports Radio Network News Update.
Stay tuned to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network for more updates at the top of every hour. You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back. Roto Experts in the morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez, the Spitting Statistician, and the King tags in the all-in kid, Jake Seeley. Jake, I have issues with the programming on Monday night on USA last night, but I'll talk to you about that offline, as it were. Jake, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
I'm doing all right.
Wondering where we're going to go with this, so.
No. We'll talk about that offline. People don't need to hear about Raw and SmackDown and all that good stuff, but I do have some comments for you in another place. Listen, Jake, I am apparently a jinx. I am apparently the kiss of death. I was trying to take advantage of the doubleheader for the Yankees yesterday, remember? And I went Aaron Judge in the second game. Did you see how Aaron Judge was inspired by my pick of him? He decided to go with, like, the platinum sombrero, 0-for-5 with 5 strikeouts in the doubleheader. I was trying to milk the game, like, get a doubleheader. He goes 0-for-9 with 8 strikeouts in the doubleheader. You know, Severino, your guy, still looks amazing. 8 innings, striking out 10-plus. But it's like I'm a jinx, Jake.
Yeah, I've never seen the 0-for... Actually, it's been a while, but...
0-for-9 with 8 strikeouts? Come on.
I was going to say that. I've never seen that in one day. I've seen the 0, I think, 1 or 2 times, maybe the 0-for-5 with 5 strikeouts. That's super rare.
Yeah, it really is, but maybe I should just stay away and not pick the Yankees
Did you see what happened? Speaking of all that stuff, did you see what happened with the poll yesterday?
Yes! Oh, boy, do we move numbers, huh? It looks like...
No. I move numbers.
Oh,
I move numbers.
Excuse me. Absolutely. You did on your own.
I am going to look. I am taking this one on my back because after when it was like 10 and 11 o'clock in the morning, I don't know, whatever the point was, it was still what you had said. It was still 52%.
It was 52%. Like 53-47, something like that. Yeah.
For Clayton Kershaw.
Yes.
And I got fed up with it, and I retweeted it. I said, this is ridiculous. This is easily Pujols. Pujols has got a decade. Yes, Kershaw is great, but it's 6 or 7 years. And I said, plus he's been hurt for the past 2 seasons, so whatever. And where did it finish?
It finished 53-47, I think, the other way, or 52-48.
For Pujols.
Yes,
I checked it an hour later, and it swung back the other direction.
Look at this. Jake is the margin of error, people. Jake is the margin of error. That's what I'm going to start calling you. Forget the all-in kid. You did move it around 5 or 6 percentage points. Go talk to the folks over at 538.
The opposite direction.
About that. Absolutely, Jake. And it's interesting. You know, we then wound up having the conversation about, like, the greatest right-handed hitters of our generation. We talked about Trout. We talked about Miggy. We talked about Pujols. I mentioned Manny Ramirez as well. I brought that up with Scott. You know, I brought that up with Scott in the first hour. You could hear that on Roto Experts in the morning. And he said, yeah.
What was his, Babe Ruth?
No, well, I said of the generation, but his generation may extend a little bit longer than yours and mine, Jake, but that's besides the point. But he said, you know, when we talk about hitter, he said overall he likes Trout. But he said a lot of that is also because of the speed, right? So if we talk about, if the question is the best right-handed hitter of the generation, then he thought he would go Albert Pujols. With Miggy and Manny, it's really, really splitting hairs. The way he tried to split the hair was casting Trout differently because of the speed augmenting his game. So, you know, we parsed the semantics on hitter. But I bring this up, Jake, real quick, because today's poll has 2 of those guys in it. It is the number 4 seed, Mike Trout, and the number 13 seed, Miguel Cabrera. We expect Mike Trout to maybe run away with this one, right, Jake?
I would say so. But, look, I would still say hitter. I don't care about the speed. Mike Trout hits, what, three something every single year? Actually, sure technically, if we want to start talking, just if we're just about like hitting skills and nothing else, like the forget power, forget like whatever. Uh-huh. You want to just talk about is it not Jose Altuve?
Right. Well, I don't know. The generation, maybe he'd have to do it for a little while longer. And, you know, that does build an interesting question. You know, people used to say, like a decade ago, that if you went and saw Ichiro at batting practice, he puts on a display. You know what I mean? At any point in time, he could pull one and yank one, but because the hand-eye coordination was so incredible, to your point of just like pure hitting skills, I would have always liked to have seen that Ichiro in a home run derby.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. But the fact is, like, he does that half run into every single
right.
hit.
So. Exactly.
I never liked it. You know, as much as I enjoyed Ichiro, I mean, technically by the rules of baseball, half of his hit, not half, but there's a good percentage of his hits where his foot was coming out of the box, and that's not legal.
Yeah,
I mean, nobody
like,
ever said anything about that.
It's like in high school softball where they do that like butcher play or the drag bunt kind of thing. But listen,
yeah.
Hey, you do what you got to do, and if it ain't called, Jake, it did not happen. We talked about that with the block charge in the NBA Finals as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, there is a couple of things I want to get into. First of all, Michael Kendricks is apparently with the Cleveland Browns. We don't need to touch out on that because we're going division by division. We are going to talk about the Cleveland Browns a little bit more later on this week. Today, we'll dive into the Pittsburgh Steelers a little bit later on. What I do want to mention, though, Jake, is what's his name? Herndon, the Jets rookie tight end, you know, he gets popped for DUI. Now, my question is not necessarily about him because I didn't think he was going to be anything anyway. What about the Jets tight end situation, Jake? I mean, they had Austin Seferian Jenkins there last year. They were notoriously a team in the previous offensive coordinator that didn't utilize the tight end at all. The Jets wide receiver room also literally has like 12 guys under contract that have some kind of NFL experience. Who's
they
catching
used to
passes?
Have 17.
Right. Well, there you go. Who's catching passes from McCown and Darnold this year?
You mean specifically for the tight end or just in general?
I mean, almost anybody at the tight end is one thing, but you have the same kind of questions at wide receiver. Everyone from Robbie Anderson to Anunua to Whitehead to Chad Hansen. I mean,
ideally, if everything's fine, if everything like so, basically, best case scenario, it's yeah. Terrell Pryor, Robbie Anderson, and Quincy Anunua is that hybrid that he's been. I mean, that's right. Best case scenario. That's if everything goes the way that they want it to in best case scenario. Then, you know, Terrell Pryor bounces back in a big way, and he's their number one option. Robbie Anderson bounces back from his issues, both injuries and off the field, and becomes sure. a great number two. And Quincy Anunua has always been the hype. That's why they don't really need a tight end. They picked up Clive Wolford from Oakland, and they have Jordan Leggett, who's nice. Actually, I think that Jordan Leggett's got
the
some
kid
talent.
Out of Clemson,
but
yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think you look at anybody on this team tight end wise and say, "Ooh, that's the guy." They have Bucky Hodges too, but like this is just like it's a bunch of ifs and ifs mm-hmm. at best. It's like that's why I think that they don't really need a true one because Quincy Anunua kind of fills that hybrid. Quincy Anunua is not really a terrific wide receiver, and he's not a great tight end. He's that hybrid that we saw before
right.
he got hurt. So as of right now, though, Terrell Pryor is not even in the mix. Right now, it's Anderson, Kirsten, and Anunua. So that's who he's throwing the ball to. If Terrell Pryor can jump over top of Kirst, that's great. But they brought in Kirst. They gave him a decent amount of money to come in from the Seahawks. And then you still have all the rest of them that you're talking about with the Chad Hansons and Devin Smith and Ardarius Stewarts and Tron Peaks and all that. Like
Lucky Whitehead.
They still, at like right now, I was serious about the 17. They don't have 17 anymore. But still, as of right now, they still have 13 wide receivers on this roster, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
They have half a dozen tight ends. They have six tight ends right now. So all this is going to be trimmed out. As I said, the ideal situation, whatever you know, is at least those four names are going to be in the mix. Kirst, Anderson, and Newell Pryor. But this is why I'm not really drafting any of them. If I'm in a deep 14-team league, maybe like, you know, with the extra two spots on my bench, I'll take a flyer on Pryor. I'll take a flyer on Anunua. People are actually paying up for Robbie Anderson, so he's probably the one I'm off on. Nobody's paying attention
right.
to Kirst. So I'll take a flyer somewhere, but right. it could basically be wide receiver by committee.
Yeah, I mean, you know, clearly there will not be 13 wideouts on the roster in a couple of months.
Just 11.
Very interesting. Yeah. Well, you know, and then they got a crowded backfield as well. But, you know, I look at these wideouts and the tight ends. You know, the tight end is always the security blanket potentially if they bring Darnold in. And listen, many people expect the Jets to be down and throwing in the second half of games. You could see a guy like Jermaine Kearse getting a lot of garbage time receptions when they, you know, when they're playing soft coverage down the road. Here's what I want to ask you, Jake. You know, I'm really excited because I'm starting to get fantasy football questions on Twitter. I know we're going to have the Exclusive Edge package coming out. We're starting our team by team previews. Jake, I wanted to ask you a question someone asked me because I know, listen, check the link, right? But I have a different twinge on this question. One of my followers is basically asking me about Thielen versus Tyreek Hill. And I know we can always just check the link, but this guy is asking about in a best ball format. And I did think that was interesting. The way I responded, Jake, was that I still go with Adam Thielen because I think he is wide receiver one. I think Hill is more of a kind of solid to good wide receiver two, in my opinion. But the best ball format makes it interesting for me because there are some weeks that Tyreek Hill is going to go bonkers and really help you out. But still with my wide receiver one, I want the safe floor. So my response is still Thielen. But my question for you, Jake, is talk to me about the best ball format and some of the things you may be looking for that could push a guy up. I mean, yesterday I remember you talking, bringing out the name DeSean Jackson. He's the kind of guy I think about when I think best ball. Can you explain to the people why that might be the case in that format?
Yeah, but that's later in drafts. So you're right.
So you're still going for your... You're still going for your floor good right. talent
I'm not,
right away.
I'm not looking for a ceiling every other week, guys, early in my draft just because it's best ball. It's just best ball just lets you go for what I've always said. It pushes you more to what I've always said of, like, stop wasting your bench on guys you're never going to start. Well, even more so in best ball, if some guys, you know, Brandon Cooks carries more value because, you know what, he shows up half the games, but those half the games, it's big. And that's the thing with DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson you hate in seasonal because you never know what
figure out which week, right?
Right. And you're probably going to miss on half of them, and then the weeks that you do, it's just, it's frustrating. You see it on your bench, and you're scoring 13, 17 points on your bench, and you're ticked off. And the fact is, that's why best ball is better for those kind of players. But when you're still drafting that early, and you're still talking about one of the top talents on your team, I'm not going to go for Tyreek Hill. And on top of that, Tyreek Hill only had 19% target share last year, and they're bringing in Sammy Watkins, and people aren't concerned about this. People aren't paying attention to the fact of what could happen to Tyreek Hill this year. So, no, I'm definitely going Thielen, but you talk about early. So, like, if Tyreek Hill is going more in the sixth round and somebody alongside of him, like, I'm trying to think of somebody who's consistent in that
range. A
more
stable kind of catch guy?
Yeah, like maybe like a Robert Woods. But see, that's too far back. But I'm just saying in that range, like, you know, there's a good one, like a Crabtree or a Woods
right.
or a Kupp or a Devontae Parker. Then I'm taking Devontae Parker because, you know what?
Okay.
We haven't seen it from him. Maybe he only does it for six or seven games, and the rest of the games he's frustrating and annoying just as things have been. But at this point, what is – Robert Woods 6 to 7 points a week going to get me compared to Devontae Parker scoring 15 one week and two the next? I can absorb right. the twos in a best ball.
Right, absolutely. So generally speaking, it's about, you know, best ball, you're okay with getting those peaks and valleys, but you're not doing it as still at the top of your draft. When you're building any team at the top of your draft, you want those guys that can win you weeks, and then later on, you might take a chance on someone who, you know, can pop off and have a huge game in that format. Thanks for the clarifications over there, Jake. Jake, we dive in, you know, it's kind of the Dane and Jake or the Jake and Dane barnstorming tour. If we had a graphic, you know, something like the NFL Network, they got like Ian Rappaport in a little car driving around the country, stuff like that. We need to see if we can get a graphic like that, us going around the country. We go to Pittsburgh today, Jake, and I got to tell you something. I personally, I try to beat the Patriots, you know, in the AFC all the time. And Big Ben and this Steelers offense is going to be one of the horses that I try and do it with. I kind of think that because they're in this division that we don't expect much of the other teams, I can see them amassing 12, 13 wins, being one of these teams that get a bye. You remember, if we play under last year's rules, the Steelers would have home field advantage in the AFC playoffs because that Jesse James catch would have been ruled a touchdown. They look really, really strong. We don't need to get into most of these guys. We know about the Killer Bees, right? We know about Le'Veon Bell. He's personally my number one overall player in fantasy personally. We know about Antonio Brown. He is mine and almost everybody's number one wide receiver in fantasy. We know about Big Ben, what he's capable of. We also know about kind of like the home road splits of a guy like Big Ben. The person I want to ask you about, Jake, is Juju Smith-Schuster. Now listen, he was great as a rookie. The reason Martavis Bryant is probably no longer in Pittsburgh. Personally, Jake, I feel like Juju is going to get overdrafted this year because he's that number two wideout in a great offense. But I just think people are going to love him a little bit too much. Am I crazy?
No, and people are definitely drafted. The mock draft, the mock magazines, the stuff they've already done so far, he's going extremely high. He's already going in the fourth round, and that's where's the upside for him to return right. value? As I always say, stop buying all the risk. You just bought every single potential for him to take a step back or see a little bit less consistency for last year. Somebody else stepping up, getting more involved, whether it's Vance McDonald, the tight end, whether it's whatever the fact may be. Not that I take anything away from Juju Smith-Schuster. I love the kid. I was high on him coming out of college, and I was surprised that he clicked as fast as he did. But they drafted another talent that I'm very high on, James Washington.
Ooh, yeah.
And if you look at the fact that like, there's just a lot here where you say it's still going to be Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell. And at best case scenario, you're always the third option. Best case. You're never going to be right. more than that. So you're looking at the fact here is, okay, he's a number two. He's being drafted ahead of several number ones. And not that he can't outproduce them. It's just you're asking a lot as a number two who's the number three option on his team. So I have no problem with Juju. I want him as my number two wide receiver on my fantasy team. I would be thrilled to get him as my number three. But right. there's some people out there that are going quick, you know. You drafted a low-end wide receiver one, and he's immediately your high-end wide receiver two, or they went running back starts with him, and he's going too high. Like I said, round four, where's the return? Like, now top 15 wide receiver, he can't get much better than that as the number two. This isn't the Packers when we had Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb right. inside the top 10.
This is not Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne. You know,
right.
I agree with you. Listen, I like the kid also, but listen, I'd be very, very happy if he's my wide receiver three. You know what I mean?
I don't think that's possible at this point.
Probably not, you know, but the thing is, he's not going to be on many of my teams because of people that I'm drafting with will probably take him ahead of where I would. Like, faced with the choice, I'll take Allen Robinson over Juju Smith-Schuster. I'll take Jarvis Landry over Juju Smith-Schuster, and I'm seeing places where Juju is...
I don't know about Landry.
In a PPR, I certainly would.
Still going to be close.
All right, fair enough. But
I would be, but yeah, that's close. But yeah, so
to your
point, right
though,
in the conversation.
He is the number three option. He will get the third most targets for the Pittsburgh Steelers this year, in my opinion. Don't forget about Le'Veon Bell, who wants to be played like a wide receiver to himself. Jake, you mentioned another rookie that is on this roster, I believe will be probably kind of the third wide receiver, in essence, playing the Juju role or the Eli Rogers role from years past. We're talking about James Washington. This kid was a stud, Jake, at Oklahoma State. Do you expect things out of him in his rookie year? Where's the outlook for a guy like James Washington? Is he going to be kind of a best ball guy where he may have some big weeks? Is he rosterable as like a wide out five on a squad? Tell me a little bit about James Washington. I know you like him.
Yeah, definitely roster. It's like bench option if you wish, but he's a bench and stash. If you draft him,
right.
you're probably not going to get any value out of him until somebody gets hurt.
Then that's until the Juju thing. Gets like, hurt, see, right?
Yeah, if Juju gets hurt, if Le'Veon Bell gets hurt, and he's been hurt right. before, you know, if somebody goes down, James Washington is going to see more opportunity. But if everybody's healthy, he's, like you said, it's best ball DFS. If you're looking at the opportunity of like when's Ben's four touchdown game coming, that's the fact of what it could be. Like we've always known what like it's kind of weird because you go back to what I just said. It's like at best case scenario, you're a third wide receiver on this team. But their third option. But the third wide receiver has popped before at times. I mean, Juju was technically the third last year. Martavis Bryant has been the third before in years past. So if you look at it, there's opportunities to have, you know, two or three of those games, and they will happen. Probably, if you're looking at this roster, for James Washington. He's a terrific talent. He, despite his size, people are going to always knock him for that. This is similar to, he's not Odell Beckham. I'm just making the comparison for size-wise. Everybody wanted to knock Odell Beckham coming out of college because of his size, and that's why he wasn't on the conversation with Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans in that draft. It's only because of his size. Well, his size isn't stopping him. James Washington is probably one of the best ball trackers in the draft, so he's going to see value. He will pass Darius Hayward Bay, and that's what I was getting to, is Hayward Bay is still there and probably going to be involved at times, but Washington will save him at some point. I wouldn't draft him just because you could probably let somebody else and then watch them drop him because he's not going to probably do much for the first couple weeks. But as you said, best ball, DFS, if somebody gets hurt, he'll have significant value.
All right, fair enough. It's time to get bold, Jake. When I like to get bold, I like to go to the tight end position. All right, you told me that, you know, Tyler Croft was not necessarily bold yesterday's show. I'm going to go back to the well, being bold with Vance McDonald. Listen, I like Vance McDonald a lot. How much? What if I told you that I think Vance McDonald can wind up with 600 yards? I think Vance McDonald can wind up with 5 or 6 touchdowns. I think Vance McDonald can catch 50 balls. And that gets you right into, you know, the tight end, 14 kind of level, tight end 15 kind of level. What I mean to say is, if you don't invest in Ertz or Gronk or Kelsey and you're trying to cobble it together, don't forget about a guy like Vance McDonald. My main point on this one is, Jake, the San Francisco 49ers traded him away only because they really liked George Kittle. The Steelers have been trying to replace, you know, their tight end production for a while. They tried it with Ladarius Green. They've tried with Jesse James, Xavier Grimble. I think Vance McDonald can kind of take this away, rendering James and Grimble somewhat obsolete. I think Vance McDonald has a chance to get into, you know, the very top of tight end 2 conversation, you know, somewhere around 13, 14, 15. I think Vance McDonald is someone people should keep an eye on in this Steelers offense. Big Ben loves the tight end.
That's not bold. Just say he's going to be a tight end 1. That's bold. Say it. Just say he's going to be a tight end 1. He only has to make it to tight end 12. If he gets those numbers you just put out, he would be a tight end 1.
Fine. Mark it down. I do think he could be a tight end 1 because I think he will be seen in the red zone. I think Big Ben is comfortable or getting comfortable with Vance McDonald. Yeah, he's a diamond in the rough. I think he could be back end tight end 1, Jake. I do.
All right. So there you go.
So I'm like bold enough for you, tight end 1.
Yeah.
What do you think, though? Am I crazy? Because I listen, you know, Ben loves, ever since Heath Miller's been gone, you know, I think Vance can actually step into that role. He was banged up, flashed a little bit towards the end of the year, but now as a full offseason, I expect bigger things out of Vance McDonald than I do out of, say, James Washington.
No, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I have him at 17, and the fact is between 17 and 12 is only about 6 points. So
okay, so yeah, that's one game, right? That's one extra touchdown kind of thing. So where would you go, Jake? I mean, this offense, listen, first of all, I believe that if any given game, if the Steelers bring their A game, they beat anybody in the NFL, Jake. But what do you think is a bold prediction for Pittsburgh?
I don't have anything else because that's pretty much the same thing I was going to say.
Vance?
Yeah, well, that's basically where I was going to go with it because there's nowhere else to go. What am I going to say about Roethlisberger? What am I going to say about
that's
Bell
what you're
going to
say. Like Le'Veon Bell, he's good. Good.
I could say Juju Smith won't be a top 20 wide receiver, but that would just almost kind of be stupid. Like, that would just be saying that just to be bold. So basically the same thing as you is that I have Vance McDonald in his 12 or 17 to get to 12. I just told you 6 points. I think to be a tight end 1 is, yeah.
All right, so let me ask you this, because I mentioned that I think the Steelers are going to be in the AFC Championship game this year, Jake. I look at their schedule, and it helps me. They're, you know, the road opener, we talked about how Cincy's on the road. You don't like my line on that one. I digress. That's fine. They get Cleveland on the road in the opener.
They're losing that game.
You think so? I think that's the best kind of possible scenario. I hear you were up on that. But after that, you know, they get a good run of home games. They have an early kind of bye. Their schedule doesn't bother me. They get the Patriots again, you know, but they get them at home. Their tough road games don't happen until late in the year. They have to go to the Dome to see New Orleans, but not until week 16. I actually think the schedule kind of matches up good for them. Jake, their over-under on mybookie.ag is 10.5 wins. I say take the over. I think they can win 13 games this year.
I'd still take the over. I think 13's a lot. I'd say 12.
So you can see them 12-4 or something like that.
But to say 11-5 is fine. But again, sure. Yeah, so 11-5 isn't that much, especially if you look at the rest of the division, who I think Cleveland could easily sweep Cincinnati and Baltimore this year.
Exactly.
Like, the Cleveland, it might be the second best team in this division, but yes.
I think the Browns finished second in this division, but that could be, Jake, though, that could be the Browns, the Bengals, and the Ravens all at like 6-10 or worse, which by definition means the Steelers are probably going to beat up on them and get to around 12 wins.
Yeah, because I told you, they're losing that first game. That's Cleveland's going to come out hot at home, I'm telling you.
So 5-1 in the division for Pittsburgh, though?
Nah, they always lose a game to the Ravens.
This, like at Baltimore or something like that?
That's why I'm saying 11 is fine. 11 is still the over. You have to go 11-5. That's not a big deal. So
here's the thing, because I do expect Pittsburgh to be playing into late January, though. I think they are one of the few teams that have to consider things like home field advantage. Jake, we know the Big Ben Roethlisberger splits home and away, right? Let's say they're not playing the Jackson 5, notwithstanding. They want that AFC title game potentially in Pittsburgh, not in New Orleans, not in some of the other cities we'll talk about later on that it could be in. And I think for the Steelers, maybe more than any other AFC contender, home field advantage matters. So I see them keeping their foot, you know, pedal to the metal and trying to get to that 13 win so that they can host on, you know, Martin Luther King weekend, whether it's the Pats or someone else. I think it's really important for them to be playing in Heinz Field in January, Jake.
You can make all the stories you want. They're not getting the 13 wins. You can keep going with it. You can go ahead and you bet it. All you have to do is bet 11.
Talk to me about the home road splits for Big Ben. Is that a real thing in your opinion?
It has to be. It's over 4 years now. So for everybody out there that's like, oh, it's just this or this, how much of a sample size do you want? It's 4 years of Ben Roethlisberger being terrible away from home, and nobody's been able to figure it out, and nobody's been able to put a pin on it because it's like one of those things. The only thing anybody's come close to is just saying he's running more plays. I forget it's either at a shotgun or under center on the road. I forget which it is. What the fact is. Right. But it's like they're kind of searching. They're kind of grasping for straws because nobody can figure it out. The fact is it's real, but nobody has a true answer for it because you look at everything gameplay-wise, and that's the closest thing they're going to find. It's not a big enough discrepancy to say, like, oh, my God, that's definitively what it is. That might be what it is, but, yes, Ben Roethlisberger on the road is a real thing, and that's why I don't own Ben Roethlisberger in fantasy ever because he's miserable on the road.
All right, fair enough. That's why I think they need to get 13 wins to host in the AFC playoffs. Real quick, last thing, Jake. Unfortunately, as we know, the Steelers will be without Ryan Shazier. Talk about, real briefly, how big of a blow is that to their defense?
I don't do IDP, so.
Oh. Well, I mean, this guy is a sideline
somebody
side
that talent,
linebacker.
Yeah.
Right,
so,
yeah. I mean, they got
the
T.J. Watt.
They have
other
pass linebackers.
Not much. I mean, you know, Vince Williams, John Bostic, that's what we're talking about. But Shazier, his impact will be felt, but obviously priorities are priorities. And we hope, you know, it's a beautiful sight just to see him walking like we saw him at the NFL draft. Jake, when we come back, what I want to do is, Jake, I want to switch our attention a little bit to baseball. The MLB draft was yesterday. There's a couple of stories I want to get into about that. And then, of course, Jake will have his opportunity to talk about his incredible lead in Roto Clio. We'll do all that when we come back right here on Roto Experts in the Morning, here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Spittin' Statistician and the All-In Kid. Come on, right back after this.
Go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. There you'll find a link to a free DFS baseball contest every day. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, and they're looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. Find out how you can help and play in free DFS contests with a shot at winning 2 tickets to a 2018 World Series game. Go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS.
Welcome Welcome back, Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The all-in kid, Jake Seeley, and the spitting statistician. We just went in on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Listen, there may be no more straightforward offense in fantasy than the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell are going to be gone by the first five picks. You know what Big Ben Roethlisberger does, like Jake Seeley says, at home in Heinz Field versus on the road. There's some other guys that are out there. We gave you our take on people like Juju Smith-Schuster, Vance McDonald, and even the rookie out of Oklahoma State, James Washington. We got a poll question up as well. Right now, we're doing our face of baseball. Jake, this one is going according to plan. Mike Trout running away with it. 84% of the vote going to Mike Trout over Miguel Cabrera, although Miguel Cabrera in his day was definitely one of the best right-handed hitters of this generation. Hey, Jake, the Major League Baseball draft was yesterday. Okay, we had kind of the first round, and there were two things that I thought were pretty interesting. One, the Oakland A's, they select a kid named Kyler Murray with the 9th overall pick. Here's the catch, Jake. Kyler Murray is also expected to be the starting quarterback for the Oklahoma Sooners this year in college football. I guess the question I have, Jake, is if you, because, you know, you played, I played college baseball, you played, I know as well, you know, you're an athlete, the all-in kid. What would you do in this situation? Try to do both sports? I personally think the path to, like, millions and fame is a lot quicker going from the Oklahoma starting quarterback to the NFL than to riding a bus around the minor leagues for a while, even as a high draft pick in Major League Baseball. What do you think about this kid? You see this? Where would you go given these kind of options?
No, well, it depends on it's not an easier path. It depends on how good of a football player he really is. I mean, are we talking about?
I mean, you got to be pretty good to start at Oklahoma, Jake.
Not necessarily. What, how many Oklahoma quarterbacks can you name in the NFL?
Exactly. Sam Bradford, Jason White was there. You know, there's a guy who's the number one overall pick. The guy who's the number one overall pick right now that was there. So there's two in the NFL out of the 32. Two of them are from Oklahoma, so that's probably a better percentage than most schools.
No, I was saying, but over the history, keep naming Oklahoma quarterbacks. Ask me the question. I'm telling you, the fact is like, he's also getting almost $5 million just for signing the first $5 million to be the 9th pick in the MLB draft. So like, the quicker path to millions is to sign right now and be done. That's the quicker path.
The 4.8 he's getting there, yeah.
He's already getting $5 million, and the fact is, if he's as good as he is, the quicker path is baseball. So first of all, he could be in the majors in 3 years. Where is he going to be in 3 years? Finishing his career at Oklahoma, hoping that he turned into a first-round draft pick, hoping that he turned into somebody who could be an NFL quarterback. So, no, a lot of people would assume the same as you, and I understand why people would assume so, is because they say the quicker path is actually baseball, and especially if he's in the majors in 3 years, and a year or two after that, he's on a trajectory where he is a top 10 talent, and he truly is one of the better outfielders coming up. Well, now you're going to be talking about an Acuna, you're going to be talking about Soto, you're going to be
Austin
talking about these
Meadows,
kind of kids.
Right.
Right, who in 2 years are going to see their teams try to buy out their arbitration years, and all of a sudden they're looking at an early career $40, $50 million contract. Don't forget, John Singleton got a $40 million or $30-something million contract and never did anything in the major leagues. He's a one-something hitter, spent half the set back to the minors, and is out of baseball now. So if you have that potential and you're already going to make $5 million, no, your quicker path is actually baseball.
Fair enough. Jake, I mean, that's what we do here on Roto Experts in the Morning, okay? I build up the straw man argument for you to tear it down. That's the dynamic we have going here.
Well, here's, look at Jeff Samardzija.
I like that. I am mad at you. Yep, that's true. Samardzija as well was a talented wide receiver from Notre Dame. Yeah.
And then what's your career in the NFL? Average. I'm not talking about Tom Brady playing until
3 years. 3.5 years or something like that, right?
Baseball, and that's the thing about baseball, is the thing is, look at to forget being a star. Let's just say he's a good player. Let's say he's just a starting outfielder. Just everyday starting outfielder hitting 270, 15 to 20 home runs a year. He's going to be in the major
league. $11 million.
That's what I was getting to. He's going to be in baseball for 10 years at least. He's going to be a starting outfielder on a team, even if he has to switch teams two or three times. As you just said, he's going to be making $10 million a year being a decent player.
Right.
What is the NFL player?
Yesterday, And my point from yesterday, Jake, you know, it's a little bit safer also to play baseball than it is to play football, right?
Yeah, exactly. With the NFL, to get to $10 million, you have to be amazing.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm taking baseball every single time.
Man, he's got that $4.8 or $5 million already locked in just for putting pen to paper. That's a good point. Listen,
right.
you know I love the Yankees, Jake, but I'm very intrigued by the Yankees' first-round pick. With number 23 overall, they take a kid, Anthony Seigler. Okay, Jake, this guy, he's a catcher, okay? And he was actually the starting catcher for Team USA's 18 and under team, okay? So we know he's legit as a catcher, but here's the fun part. Jake, this guy is basically Shohei Ohtani plus, what is that guy, Pat Venedet, the switch pitcher, you know? He's basically all of these things.
He just got called up.
He hits, right. He hits lefty and righty. He throws lefty and righty. He pitches. He plays catcher. He plays the outfield. His stats are incredible at, like, you know, for a high school team in Georgia that was, like, you know, class 4A, state runner-up. This is no joke. He also has wheels. Something like he stole 20 bases, threw out 55% of the runners that tried to steal against him. Very interesting. He's going to be a catcher in the Yankees organization coming up. But very interesting, Jay, because I remember back in the day, you know, the best athlete was the pitcher, was the shortstop, was the number three hitter, right? We're in this era of specialization so much, kids playing on AAU basketball teams at age 11, you know. I think this is very, very interesting, especially as we talked about kind of the evolution of pitching rotations, using the opener. Maybe you need a Swiss Army knife kid like this. What do you think about this kid, Ziegler, that the Yankees drafted?
He's going to end up somewhere. He's going to end up with a specific position. They're not going to keep him doing this type of stuff because the fact is it's not. It's teams want you to focus on and become amazing at what you're doing. They don't want you to try
the specialization.
And be
absolutely.
Good. The only
you have
reason
lefty specialists that come in for one hitter.
Right, and that's the thing. It's, you know, even it's surprising to you even have a kid like this because normally once you get to high school, whatever you're doing, yes, mm-hmm. you're the best athletes, you're right. Yes, I played high school up until college, and the same thing is the best athlete usually ends up being a pitcher who plays another position, whether it's shortstop mm-hmm. or third or second throughout the other days. The fact is they once you're an elite level talent pitcher prospect, like if you look at the kids in this draft, if you look at someone like the Ryan Weathers, I mean, granted, his dad David Weathers was a reliever. Casey Mize, the number one pick. The fact is like, you know, he might have been the best athlete, but at some point somebody said, you know what, you have the potential to be an amazing pitcher. We're going to just focus on that. And that's why we get these pitchers who don't know how to hit the major league level because all they focus on is pitching for the rest of their career. The fact is once they figure out what they want him to be. I mean, it might take a little while. He might be kind of a mix of everything to start. But if he starts showing, like, this is where his true talent lies, they'll kind of focus on that. They're not going to try and make him Ohtani because the Ohtani worked because he was already that somewhere else.
Right.
Like, he didn't come up through
he
the minor leagues.
He was a finished product as right, that already.
Right. And that's a league that could do that. You know, that's, mm-hmm. you know, again, and he might extend for a year or two as they try to continue to see it play out. But I think at some point he'll have a definitive position.
No, I hear you. And I think that's right. I guess the only question I would throw out to you is, listen, we are being so specialized. Teams are carrying, you know, 13 pitchers these days, right? And that keeps you only having like two guys on your bench. Maybe not this kid, but I'm talking about, you know, I'm now zooming out a little bit, Jake, to include, you know, your not the pitchers and hitters, but, you know, your Marwin Gonzalez's of the world, your Eduardo Nunez. I do believe that the people who can do more things are becoming more and more valuable to major league rosters, especially as they realize that because of the proliferation of power bullpen arms, you need to carry more pitchers. So maybe you need players that are more of a Swiss Army knife. I'm not saying this kid is going to be Ohtani, but, you know, I do think there could be an evolution going in that direction over time.
No, and it would make more sense if he wasn't a catcher. That's the right. problem. It's like if you were talking about this kid and he was a first baseman, so he could right. spend time at DH in first base and pitch – I could see it being more plausible that it would happen. The problem is the catcher. Like, look at Gary Sanchez. I mean, they're trying to get him out of behind the plate to keep him away. Like, the catcher just
the
takes way too much wear and tear. And well, that too, because his defense is terrible. The fact is, catcher-pitcher, I don't see working. That's the problem.
It's you an know, interesting it's, combo. Like, it is.
It's a terrible combo, honestly. You take way too much pounding and way too much just from being behind the plate. There's a reason why catchers don't hit. Huh. for like, look at the hat, like catchers hit 210. There's a reason. It's because they're just not that good because of how much wear and tear they take from everything else being the catcher. So he's also somebody, he doesn't even reach the 90s with his pitch. I think like Vendite or however you say his last name, Vendite or sure. whatever it is.
Pat, yeah. Pat.
yeah. I think Pat V, yeah. There, so there I think more of the fact is it's more of a not a gimmick but fun to see than anything. Like because there's a reason like that kid's been in the minors. Pat V's been in the minors for how many years now? I know it's been at least
true.
three
We've
or four.
We've heard his name. We've heard like, his name right, before. Yeah. yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, it's cool. This guy could pitch with both arms and switch it up while he's on the mound, and they actually have a rule, and they clarified what that rule was so he's not going back and forth. The hitter's not going back and forth.
Right.
I think to see this is just kind of more of like, hey, that's cool, that's fun, but let's figure out where he's going to play.
All right, fair enough. It is interesting to bring up. One thing I'll say, I know, Jake, neither you or I have any offspring just yet, but as soon as I do, I'm putting balls, I'm putting forks, I'm putting everything in both hands of the kid. He's going to get in the left hand, he's going to get in his right hand, he's going to put a putter in his left hand as well. I'm not doing that.
The last part was correct. If I have a kid, I'm just going to start teaching him to play golf. That's the easiest one to just make money. Forget that.
Little no CTE risk on that one, huh, Jake?
No, that's the easiest way.
Fair enough. One other topic I wanted to get into real quick. We will make our Roto Clio picks as well. I don't know if you saw this. Aaron Boone came out, you know, former ESPN employee Aaron Boone, came out and has beef with some of the scheduling that ESPN has been a part of. They had a game that was supposed to be a 1 o'clock game. I believe it's Sunday, July 8th, and they moved it to Sunday Night Baseball. Okay, so they're starting at 8 p.m., and it's a home game at the stadium, I believe. Here's the problem. The next day, the Yankees have a doubleheader in Baltimore, which would make them literally have three games starting within 24 hours, and it's been moved for television purposes. Does Aaron Boone and the Yankees, do they have a legit gripe here, Jake?
They do, but they haven't worked the wrong people. But the problem is they're coming after ESPN. It's not ESPN. The problem is you have to have it with the Players Association. That's who agreed to let this happen.
Because of their agreement with ESPN, right.
Yeah, it's not ESPN. Don't boycott ESPN. Like, I have no love lost for, like, you know, the big conglomerate sports networks and all that type of stuff. And, you know, like, ESPN used to get theirs. That's not where I'm coming from at all. I'm not going to sit here and say that. The fact is, if you look at it, though, it's not their fault. ESPN are not the ones that are making you play there. ESPN wanted to change the game from 1 to 8 because similar to the NFL flex is they wanted the better game on Sunday Night Baseball. But baseball could have said no. The Players Association, all everything. Baseball could have said that's who you have beef with. That's who you should be fighting with. Boycotting ESPN isn't your problem. You should be going to your organization because your organization let it happen, and that's who needs to fix the problem. So that's the thing. Yes, they have beef. For 100%,
it's a legit concern for player safety, for the travel. It's a legitimate concern.
Three games within 24 hours? I mean, come on. That's a little ridiculous. I 100% agree with that. At the same time, is you have beef with the wrong people.
All right, fair enough. I kind of do agree with you. You know, from my Yankee homer perspective, I'm like, ah, damn the man. Who can I blame? You know, but you make a good point. There are agreements here with the teams and the networks. You know, and everyone loves having the Yankees on TV. It equals ratings. One thing, though, listen, this schedule, maybe you want to get ahead of this and you want to jump on Baltimore in the second game of that doubleheader on July 9th. If you do, go on over to mybookie.ag. They got a player prop tool. You can move the line a little bit. I love the player prop tool, okay? You could avoid the Sharks like Jake Seeley, like our guy Dinkmeyer, like Mike Leone over at DailyRoto.com, because they win 90% of the money in DFS. Okay, invest in the players that you want without salary caps. Forget having to create multiple lineups. Go to mybookie.ag, open a new account, and use the promo code FNTSY. You'll receive a 50% deposit bonus. You could also go on over. Both Jake and I agree that the Pittsburgh Steelers will win over 10.5 games this year on their way to what we both believe will be the AFC North divisional title. All right, Jake, we got one more thing to do here, and it is, in fact, Roto Clio. Like we said, I had the jinx put on me. I was the jinx. Aaron Judge going 0-for-9 with 8 strikeouts. I stayed away from Severino. You got the win there. Tropiano did not do it for me. I don't know, Jake, if you saw our guy J-Rod our guy J-Rod, he had picks as well yesterday. He was taking Clayton Richard for a quality start, so I think he got that right. And he took Jankowski for a steal. Jankowski, I don't think, swiped the bag, but he does have 10 on the year, hitting like 307, Jake. Jankowski's pretty viable. Surprising. I knew the steals would be there, but him hitting over 300 is a nice little surprise. He's only owned in about 20% of fantasy leagues right now. But we turn the page. Where are you going today, Jake?
Oh, you're going to me first. All right, well, then
I can go. I can go.
No, you went first yesterday. That's fine.
Fair enough. Go ahead.
I will give you my pitcher first, and I'm actually, I mean, look, I'm avoiding Scherzer.
There's a lot of aces on the hill today. There are a lot of aces on the hill.
There's actually two facing each other in Paxton and Keuchel. That'll be interesting to watch. So I'm not going with all those. And Bumgarner's making his debut, by the way. I guess it's
same question
place.
We facing, had, though. Will he paging, be able to go
yeah,
long enough?
Patrick, and then Patrick Corbin's on the other side. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually going to go with a team that's been struggling of late. Nobody can hit. Rhys Hoskins is out, so I'm going with Kyle Hendricks for the Cubs for the win.
Kyle Hendricks. I'm going to go chalky. The one big-time ace you did not mention who is at home in an interleague matchup with unfamiliar bats is my man, Corey Kluber. So, yes, I am going chalky, Jake, but I gotta catch up.
That's we don't, super chalky.
I know. We don't have much time. I'm going less chalky offensively. Where I'm going to go, Jake, I am going to attack Matt Moore. I'm going to attack Matt Moore, who's pitching to a 7.85 ERA. They're down in Texas. It's getting a little bit warmer out there. Give me Matt Olson to go yard today. His ISO has been sick. I'm going Matt Olson in the dish today.
Well, then that's fine. I thought you were going to take my pick. I'm taking his teammate, Chris Davis, to go deep.
Oh, there we go. There we go. So someone's going yard in Texas. We'll find out who. Jake, a lot of fun today, man. We're getting a little bit of a groove here. I'll tell you what I didn't like about the programming on Monday night via text a little bit later on, okay? Tomorrow, we got Colin Drew joining us. We're going to talk Baltimore Ravens, all that and more. Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Listen, guys, Carton and Friends up next. They got fun with the Fantasy Executive. Keep it locked right here. Award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. See y'all tomorrow.